98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Everything you need, all in one spot. Every day, we call it the 4 o'clock reset. Our reactions to the top stories making news here on the Burns and Gambo show. Thank you for hanging out with us. Diamondbacks try to avoid the sweep against the Chicago Cubs. The Diamondbacks have now lost a mind-numbing 18 of their last 25 games. Six back with 10 to play. Robbie Ray versus Cole Hamels, the matchup tonight. The lineup for the Diamondbacks.
They should be eliminated in the next, like, 3 days.
I think the elimination number is five. I believe
any
I read today.
Combination of five wins by the Dodgers, losses by the D-backs.
And that's in the wild card race as well. Yeah. Your lineup tonight tells you everything you need to know about the state of D-backs baseball right now, despite what is being said about them still being in this race.
I love this lineup. I'm not going to lie to you.
Jay, Vargas, Marte, Walker, Kivlahan, Ahmed, Owings, Mathis, and Ray.
Good.
No Peralta,
good.
No Goldie.
You know what? They're not getting the job done. Good. I mean, honestly, I mean, take them off. This lineup's been garbage for the last couple of days. They had, what, four hits yesterday, three hits the day before. I mean, you know what? I mean, these guys, give these other guys a chance. These other players are spent. Like, there's nothing left. Like, they tried. It didn't work. So, at this point, pull them all. Put these guys in. Let Vargas and Walker and CEO, give these guys a chance, and you know, maybe you'll get some offense. Because obviously with the regular lineup, they're not getting any hits.
Bob Nightingale tweeted out, the D-backs, after Tuesday's blowout loss to the Cubs, decide to bench most of their regulars.
Fifth inning.
Certainly, they're doing the Brewers no favors as the Brewers try to stay alive in the NL Central race.
I'd be pissed if I was the Brewers. I mean, I get it. I understand.
Brewers are set. 3.5 back of the Chicago Cubs right now. The Dodgers, by the way, a game and a half lead over the Colorado Rockies. They are hosting the Rockies again tonight. They're also looking for the sweep there after Chris Taylor's walk-off last night in the 10th. Tyler Anderson and Walker Buehler, the matchup tonight as the Dodgers inching closer to a National League West division.
Yeah, it sucks. It was a great pitching matchup with Freeland and Kershaw last night, and Arenado had a big error thrown at the third base, and it got away, and the Dodgers end up winning it on the Taylor walk-off with one out on a solo home run. So now they're a game and a half up on the Rockies and looking to win this division again for the sixth straight time.
Jimmy Butler has asked for a trade from the Minnesota Timberwolves. He wants out. The three teams that are being reported as his preferred destinations are the Brooklyn Nets, the New York Knicks, and the L.A. Clippers.
Wow.
He's looking for a five-year, $190 million max extension with one of those three teams. According to the report, Gambo, he's willing to expand his field of teams based off of interest level and whether they want to pay him the max money. So it doesn't just have to be those three teams. And, of course, Suns fans immediately want to know if their team is going to get in on another superstar that might be for sale.
Listen, I love Jimmy Butler as a player. I really do. And at some point, you got to pull the trigger and you got to go get one of these guys. I mean, you have to. I think the Suns could improve by 10 games, but look at the West and then tell me who they're better than. I mean, who are they better than in the Western Conference? It's tough to find teams that Sacramento. Okay, who else? How many teams are they better than in the West?
Yeah.
They also traded away one of the best assets they had to move up in the draft, and that was that unprotected Miami pick in 2021. That's gold. That pick is gold. They don't have that anymore, so they lose a little bit of leverage in their ability to make deals.
I do wonder if it is going to be the Clippers. Could the Suns get in on a Patrick Beverley trade if they're looking to find a third team to help facilitate some sort of a deal? Potential.
Sure.
I mean, if that's what you want, if you want that player from the Clippers, and the Clippers go after Jimmy Butler, can you get in on that to get the point guard you want without giving up the assets that might be required if you just did a straight one-on-one trade? I don't know. Just a thought. But our top story of the day, the Arizona Cardinals back on the practice field today. And when we tell Sam Bradford that the playbook has been scaled back, what exactly does that mean for the Cardinals quarterback?
You know, the plays that we have in the game plan, everyone's comfortable with, versus multiple looks, just really feel like, you know, we own the plays that are in the game plan that week. As opposed to having so many calls on the sheet that, you know, maybe we know them, but we're not, owning them the way that we should. And then, you know, I think the thought is just allow everyone to go out there and play faster, simplify everything a little bit, and hopefully it shows up in the speed in which we play.
Last in total offense, last in passing offense, last in passing yards per attempt, the fewest first downs, the worst third down completion percentage in the NFL, the fewest points, which is 17 less than the next lowest scoring team. It's been a terrible start. We've gone through all the numbers. We've seen it with our eyes. We know it. The question is, why? And who is responsible? And who needs to get their act together so it doesn't happen again against the Chicago Bears?
Number one, Sam Bradford. In looking at game film, and looking at the game film, and some of these plays, and I mean, I could show you some of these plays. I mean, he's missing so many open receivers and making so many bad decisions and not recognizing the positions of defensive backs and throwing to guys that are covered. And, you know, there's routes where there's one guy under and one guy over, and the defensive back goes to the under, and the over guy is open, and he throws to the under, who's covered. There's another play in which there's three guys, there's trips left. I'm looking at this play right now. There's trips left. One guy does an out pattern, two guys do a hook. The out pattern's covered. The first hook is wide open. The second hook is covered. He throws it to the out. The hook's wide open. I'm watching it. Like, he's missing. Like, he's just, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't look like he is he's a smart quarterback. I mean, I don't understand, but I am looking at these plays and I'm watching Sam Bradford, you know, not going through his reads, not going through his progressions, getting rid of the ball so quickly that he doesn't see who's open. Because I could show you plays right here, and it's just, how do you not go through the read? Okay, covered, open, hit him. Or covered, open, hit him. He's just, it's like he's just, the first read is that's who I'm throwing it to. That's who I'm supposed to throw to. That's who I'm throwing to. Instead of saying, that guy's covered, let me make my read, let me make my progression, let me find, and he's not doing that. I'm putting a lot of blame now on Sam Bradford's inability to find open receivers.
Almost as if he's in a hurry to get rid of the ball.
Absolutely.
Almost as if he's
100%.
Almost as if he's like, there's this ticking clock in his head. One, two, get rid of it. One, two, get
yep.
rid of it.
100%.
I mean, because if
100%.
Because if that's what it is,
100%.
Then I think the question Sam Bradford was asked today is particularly relevant, and that is, are you playing more cautious?
I don't believe so. I mean, I would say no to that.
Are there other things that you're changing this week to make you more comfortable with offense?
You know, like I said, just try to go out there and execute and, you know, play well.
Not a very expansive answer.
No, he's wrong.
And I wouldn't expect him to give an expansive answer. But
he's lying to himself. He's lying to himself. Look, he is not recognizing the defensive back's positioning, and he's throwing it quickly to guys that are covered. And I'm telling you, like, this is not good. And if this doesn't get fixed right away, then as a coaching staff, now I didn't have this information available to me Sunday or Monday or Tuesday, but what I'm looking at today on Wednesday, I am seeing a quarterback who is doing exactly what you just said. He's getting rid of the ball as quick as he can, and he's not taking a look to see who's open, and he's not going through any reads, and he's not going through any progressions, and I could literally, I'm telling you, there was one play, trips left, out pattern, hook, the middle hook is wide open, and he throws it to the guy that's completely covered on the out. There's another play with two guys on the right. One's an under route, one's an over route. The defensive back jumps the under route. The over is wide open, and he throws it to the under. Bernsey, I'm telling you, he's making really, really bad reads.
And if that's the case, then that's the real concerning part here is that I don't know if you can coach that out of him right now. Look, he's been through a lot. Physically, more than maybe any quarterback has in the last 30 years of this game in terms of all the injuries he's had and all the things that he's had to come back for. If he is playing cautiously, if he is getting rid of the ball too quickly, there has to be a very short leash.
Are they telling him?
I'm sure on the film, I mean, if it's obvious to you, it's obvious to them.
1-2 bang.
I'm sure they're seeing it too, and I'm sure it's right there in front of everybody. And if it lasts much longer, they're not going to have much of a choice. Now, Steve Wilks today reiterated Sam Bradford is the quarterback right now.
Sam right now is the quarterback, as I stated before. I don't think it's just the quarterback position. I think we have some issues across the board in all three phases, and we're working on those issues. I think we've done a great job trying to correct those issues, starting with trying to simplify things with the game plan, allowing guys to play fast. That's what I saw today. Guys executing, doing the little things right. So, no, Sam's the guy.
But if he is playing cautious, it's not going to last much longer. It's not going to last much longer at all.
I'm not buying the scaled back playbook either. I think it's a bunch of garbage. I think they're just trying to. They've only run 80 plays in two games. What are you scaling back?
Yeah.
You've run 80 plays in two games. Nothing that they ran was complicated. There's nothing that's complicated out there. So there is some underlying problems here, and it starts and ends with Sam Bradford.
Hindsight is always 20/20. Now that the season is just about done, what should Mike Hazen have done about it? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. For the first time, there was a reference. In the midst of all the, we still have a heartbeat, we still have 2 feet in this race,
heartbeat.
We're still in it.
It's a love beat.
Troy Lovello last night, for the first time, vaguely referenced the future.
We aren't shutting down, we aren't quitting, we aren't giving up. We still have 2 feet in this race, and I believe that something good can come out of this. Whether it's tomorrow or next year, I believe we're learning some valuable lessons that are going to help us move on and become the organization and the team that we need to become. Like I said, whether it's tomorrow or in the future, I don't know.
Whether it's tomorrow
or
next year.
Did he kind of like want to backtrack after he said next year? Because then he came back tomorrow or in the future.
Well,
listen, there is lessons to be learned. I mean, there's definitely lessons to be learned. For Torrey, overuse of the bullpen. I think Torrey blew the bullpen this year. This guy's aghast. There's got to be something to learn about that. He admitted it on our show. He's got 4 of the top 7 games played pitchers in all of baseball, his relievers. Guys are burnt out. Diekman, my God, he's got nothing left in the tank.
ERA of 9 since he's been here.
He can't get anybody out. So the bullpen has been misuse of the bullpen, number one lesson to learn for Torrey Lovello. Starters got to go deeper into games. They do. And you can't just keep blowing out your bullpen. That's a mistake. And then I think the other thing to learn really is the Burnsy 18, and I'm going to go back to it because it was a really good thought by you, a really great idea. Look, you have to beat the weaker teams.
Yeah,
like they were playing a stretch against all last place teams, and we knew after that stretch was over they were going to play all first place teams. Well, how are they doing against all first place teams?
Not well.
Playing awful.
Not well.
No, like they're playing terrible.
They haven't won a series in a month, right?
So why, but to lose that game to San Diego, to lose the series to the Reds, they had an opportunity where they were playing a lot of bad baseball teams. Now, that doesn't mean that those teams would quit on the season. They were still playing hard, but they didn't do a good enough job in the 18 games to try to build up a cushion. I think that's another lesson to be learned. There's a lot of lessons to be learned here. Torrey's right. Because this team had a chance for a special season, and they weren't able to capitalize.
Last night's loss, 18 of 25 now, 6 back with 10 to play. I continue to be worried about it. I know you're not as concerned about it as I am. I do not want this team to finish at 500 or below 500, given that they spent the bulk of the year in first place. That would just be an almost shameful way for the season to end if they end up at 80 and 82 or even 81 and 81. Given they were in first place for most of the year. But now, with last night's loss, it really felt like a turning of the page and almost the official beginning to okay, what went wrong this year and what are you going to do about it next year? Like, this season's done, no playoffs. We all understand that. We acknowledge that. Number one, did Mike Hazen do enough this year to try to go for it in 2018? And probably even the bigger question, and I'll ask you both, in 2019, what do you do if you're this organization now?
It depends on Corbin and Pollock.
Okay, let's say they're both gone. What do you do?
You can't make a move like Steven Souza again. Like, that backfired. He was terrible. He's hitting 220. I mean, he's been he was awful.
Okay, but I'm not talking about. I'm not. Okay, no, maybe what, I'm not being clear. But
okay,
Goldie, Greinke, contending status.
You're saying I'm losing Corbin and Pollock?
I'm saying, let's say you lose Corbin and Pollock next year. Do you hold on to Paul Goldschmidt one final year if you plunge yourself into the rebuild? If you decide your window,
God,
we're here now, okay. And it's not time for a decision now. Okay. But it's time to start thinking about these things now.
It's fair. You lose Corbin, you lose Pollock. Okay, now am I going to take that money and spend it on other guys to replace them? I still got Greinke. I still got Ray. I mean, I know what you're saying, and it's a very fair question. I don't know that I want to go there, but. You're saying if you lose Corbin and you lose Pollock, do you trade Goldie now and get something for him? I mean, that's exactly what you're asking me. I know that.
I'm saying that if you decide it's time to rebuild this thing,
then you have to trade him.
Okay. And Paul Goldschmidt, even if he wants to stay, but if he wants to be paid the money that he thinks he should make, does it make any sense for a rebuilding team to have a player that expensive on their roster?
Well, what do all these guys have in common? You ready? Johan Duran, Gabriel Maciel, Ernie De La Trinidad, Wei Che Huang, Tommy Eveld, Michael Perez, Brian Schaefer. What all these guys have?
They were Diamondbacks prospects who were traded in the name of going for it this year.
Right. They lost eight prospects.
Yep.
They traded away eight prospects to go get Ziegler and Diekman and Andries to try to go for it this year.
Okay, but none of their
eight prospects.
I know, but none of their top prospects, which then brings me back to the first question that I asked you. There are probably some who are thinking, you know what, Mike Hazen? You should have done more. You should have traded more of your top guys so that you could have been in on the Machados of the world, the Brad Hands of the world, the Zach Brittons of the world. And even Hazen, I was reading a story this morning on The Athletic in which the author comes right out and asks that question. Did you do enough in 2018 to make this the best baseball team it could be, knowing that this window might be closing on you at the end of the year? And what Hazen said was ultimately the record will be the judge of that in 2018, and we're going to fall short of where we want to go. But what he was trying to do, and we talked about this, Gambo, responsibly going for it, right? Giving up prospects to get Diekman and Ziegler and Andries and Escobar, but not giving up your top guys so that if you do go through the rebuild, at least you have them to be a part of it.
You didn't want to give up that top pitching prospect until I told you that they don't view him as a one or a two.
And then I would have given him up.
We talked about it. Their top pitching prospect, would you trade him in a deal for? They were not going to trade the top pitching prospect in a deal for Machado. But their top pitching prospect doesn't really grade out as a 1-2. He's more of a 2-3 and probably more of a 3 than a 2. So, you know, should they have done that? I mean, this year to me was wide open. I don't blame them for going for it. They felt that they did get Escobar. That was a really good upgrade when Lamb went down. I loved the addition of Escobar.
But do you blame them for not going for it more?
But what, like...
You know what more is. More is Duplantier. More is Taylor Clark. More is...
For who?
The Machados. Brad Hand. Zach Britton.
The problem with Britton in hand. I'm going to tell you the problem with Britton in hand. At the trade deadline, their 7-8-9 was good. Like, their 7-8-9 was not... Like, to me, that wasn't a problem.
That wasn't a problem.
It was the middle relief. So to sit there and say, should they have gone after Hand and gone after Britton, to me, no.
That's a very fair point.
Your 7-8-9 was lights freaking out. Like what's happening to us here at the arena.
I know, they're turning out the lights on
us. So like hindsight being 2020, if you would have known now what you didn't know then, yes, okay, I would have went for one of those guys. But I promise you, and you know this, their 7-8-9 was good at the trade deadline. They didn't need... The closer, they needed the middle relievers.
But it is very obvious that now, with 10 games to go, it is big picture question time for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, you're going to get me to that point. I mean, it's a discussion for next week. The question is, do you trade Paul Gold? It depends on what happens with Corbin and Pollock.
Yep.
It depends what your payroll is going to be. But the question is, can you trade? Here's what you can't afford to do. You can't have Goldie walk for nothing.
No, you can't.
So if you're not going to pay him. then you've got to consider it.
He has played on playoff teams before. Do the Coyotes have a look of a postseason contender this year? We'll ask Coyotes center Derek Stepan that question next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Welcome back. It is the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, and we are live from Gila River Arena, our annual visit to Arizona Coyotes training camp. And joining us right now from the Coyotes, Derek Stepan here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Welcome. Thanks for stopping by. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Always fun hearing you and Gambo trade New York stories from all your time.
7 years with the Rangers at the Garden.
That's
the
right.
Garden. Yeah, I always hated the Rangers growing up. I used to... Before they won the Stanley Cup, the best chant of all time was 1940. 1940. Oh, we used to just shove it right up. Yeah, we just hated them so much, and we used to chant that. And then they won the damn cup, and we weren't able to say the 1940 anymore. Did you know about that?
You know, I didn't.
You didn't see? I taught you something today.
Yeah,
so 1940 was the last time they won the cup before the Mateau,
yeah.
And they won the cup. So we were enjoying that long run of them not winning. But we used to just always chant it all the time.
I could see you sitting in the stands chanting that.
Perfect.
Yeah, just leaning over the glass, trying to get in someone's ear.
Just trying to get into a fight with the Ranger fans.
Any way you can get under someone's skin.
Absolutely. Yeah, I did it all the time.
And here we are 40 years later, and he's still doing the same thing. Doing whatever he can.
Still
to
trying to get into a fight. Yeah.
Right. How would you classify your first season with this organization in retrospect now, looking back on it?
Yeah, the beginning of it was certainly a whirlwind. I think it was a lot of guys were a little bit lost. I think I keep using that word. I think it's a good word because I think we have a good group of guys here that want to make the thing better and get it ship turned the right way. And there were so many guys trying to help that we were just kind of lost within our own game. Even our head coach even said he learned a lot in the first few games. But as the season rolled on, I felt that as I got more comfortable and as my family got more comfortable, I got more comfortable with the team. My play started to come with it, and I thought our group play came with it too. So it was certainly a roller coaster start, but I was really happy with the way our group went through adversity. And, you know, we really found our identity as a group and played a real strong second half.
I know one thing Tak told me that he was really appreciative of with you was when you were going through all those struggles and not playing well, you would literally go in there and talk to him and say, I'm not playing well. I'm gonna get better. Like, you know. Mm. So I know he respected that because there were a few times when I think you actually went in and talked to him one-on-one and you weren't happy with the way you were playing and you let him know that you were going to do better.
Yeah. You know, I think that's – you got to be honest. And if you want to be a good pro, you can't – you know, look to someone else to help you out in any way. So you got to dig deep within yourself and you got to answer the bell, and you can't hide behind poor play. That's part of being a pro, and that's part of, you know, being a good person. You know, you don't hide behind poor work. You know, I'm certainly, when you have a bad day on the radio, I'm sure you don't hide behind it.
I just blame him.
Yeah, sounds about right.
No, you know what? I'm laughing because he's being 110% honest. He just blames me. Yeah.
You know, I think that's in my DNA. That's how I am. I'm going to be honest, and I know when I'm playing well, I'm making guys around me better, and I wasn't doing much of that at the first half, and I think Talk even was honest in his, too. He's like, I'm not quite there yet either. And I think as a group, we grew.
I tried to talk him off the ledge a few times. I said, look, man, just break it down into a football game. First quarter, second quarter, third quarter, fourth quarter. Because that first quarter was so bad.
Yeah.
And you guys had played so bad, you couldn't win any games. And I was like, man, just end it. First quarter's over. Now it's second quarter. Let's get better. Third quarter. So now you're in the second half of the season. So, you know, when I would talk to Talk, a lot of it was just like, okay, you just got to get that pass. You can't keep thinking about how bad the start was. Yeah. How did you get past that really bad start?
Well, with the help of him, obviously, Talk was a big part of it, kind of getting the ship turned the right way individually for me. And then, you know, I think the biggest thing is when I was in New York, we were in the playoffs. We were a veteran team. We were stacking up at the deadline. I got here for the first year, and it's a different mindset. You know, last year was a big learning year for our group. We're learning a new system. We're teaching young guys what it takes to be a pro. You know, you have to be honest with yourself. You have to come into practice and be ready to work, regardless if you lost 7-1 or if you won 7-1. Your practice habits can't change. And it was a big learning year, and I think we had a lot of guys learn a lot what it takes to be a pro. And I think that's going to be a big part of moving forward here is Yeah, we're a young team, but now we need to, you know, at some point you need to grab it by the horns here a little bit, and we can't lean on that. Now we've got our experience, and we got our lessons that we learned, and we got to learn quicker, and we got to learn faster this year.
Derek Stepan, our guest here on the Burns and Gambo Show, was there a moment last year, and I'm struggling to remember the moment I thought it was, where the light kind of went on and everything kind of clicked and everyone, oh, okay, we get it now. We're not lost anymore, to borrow the word. Was there a moment last year that you remembered where it all seemed to kind of fall into place?
Yeah, I think there is moments throughout the first 20 that, you know, you would think would jumpstart us, and it just didn't really stick. We had a team meeting, I want to say right before our Western Canada trip. We played in Montreal was the first stop, and then we had an honest meeting. We had guys really be honest for the first time about, you know, like, hey, you know, we can sit here and talk. Hey, we need to be better here, here, and here. But guys just finally said, hey, enough's enough. Like, everybody's got to work harder. Just plain and simple. Let's forget about the X's and O's. When the puck is dropped, the guy across from you, you got to work hard for him, him, and him. You got to sacrifice yourself. And I think that was a big point. At least in my eyes, I think that Montreal meeting was you know, the start of it. And then we kind of went in a little in and out here for a little bit. And then, you know, the last 40 games right before we started that good stretch, I think we understood that, you know, like I said, we can't have these meetings all the time. It's got to just be within yourself and just go out and do your job. And yeah, I think that Montreal meeting would be the turning point for me.
This isn't a high market team where they're going to go out there and, you know, go get Carlson or somebody like that. But they did add Gilchenyk, Hinostroza, Grebner. They added some players here. You were one of the new guys a year ago. Now you're seeing these new guys come in, some veterans with some experience. What do you think of the additions?
Yeah, Chikes had a really good summer. He was able to get a guy like Galchenyuk, who is a goal scorer. I mean, if you were here last night, the way he shoots the puck is elite.
Can he play center?
I think so. I think there's some things that he's continuing to work on, getting back into his center position. And I know he's kind of bounced all around. He's got to get back to his center habits. But that's something that I think he's going to get back quickly. And I think his biggest thing is Tok is working with him each day. Tok is constantly talking to him about just allowing himself to just not overthink being a center. Just go out and play and just let your instincts take over. And you can see him. He's got center instincts. And when he gets the puck in the blue inside his, the offensive zone, and he is able to unleash on it, there's not many goalies that can stop it.
Derek Stepan here, our guest on the Burns and Gambo Show, for a couple more minutes as we're live from Coyotes training camp. I saw a TSN player poll the other day, 33 different players. I don't know if you saw this or not. You guys were a majority pick by the players polled to make the playoffs this year.
And it wasn't all Coyotes that were in the poll.
It wasn't 33 Coyotes who were polled. I'm assuming it was a relatively random sample throughout the league. Is that, as you go into this season, is that realistic? Is that doable? Is that something that still a lot of work has to be done to get to that point?
I think if you come into a season without the goal to make the playoffs to start, you're on the wrong foot right from the beginning. Our goal is to make the playoffs. That is step one. And then I always say goal number one is your first 10 games. Goal number two is your second 10 games, and so on and so forth. But the ultimate goal is to make the playoffs. And once you make the playoffs, goal number two is get past round one and get past round two and so on and so forth. You got to try to break it up because it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. You got to break the season down as best you can, but you have to come into training camp and you have to come into the season, and your goal needs to be we're in that hunt and we get a chance to compete for the cup. And if that's not your goal, then we're wasting our time. I think that's something that our group when I talk to the older guys, it's summer was too long last summer. Let's get back on track here and let's make sure that we're playing past April.
Always a pleasure catching up with you. Thanks for taking a couple minutes out of your day to stop up here and see us. I know you're really busy with training camp. Thanks for stopping by, Derek.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. You guys are the best.
Derek Stepan joining us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Now join Bickley and Murata tomorrow live from the Buffalo Wild Wings on Rural, just north of University in Tempe, giving away D-backs tickets, ASU tickets. Stop by wearing your ASU gear to win. For more details, visit the events page at ArizonaSports.com. You've heard this one before. Disgruntled star wants out. Should the Suns get in? Can the Suns get in? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update presented by Sanderson Ford.
What you got for us, Andy?
Well, since you guys are out at Gila River Arena today talking with the Coyotes, I put this out for everybody. Will the Arizona Coyotes make the playoffs in 2019 for the first time since 2012? 55% say yes, this is the year. 45% say no, the team still needs work.
I don't think they're a playoff team. The West is really tough.
I was surprised to see some people do think they're a playoff team, though.
Yeah, because I
was surprised by that.
Listen, Tuck's a good coach. Yeah.
They were playing well towards the end of the season last year.
They were.
They kind of figured some things out the last couple of months of the season last year.
Yeah, I mean, the goaltending got a lot better. Yeah. I think they're still probably a year away.
Yeah.
I still think they're probably one more year away.
The home opener for the Coyotes is on Saturday, October 6th against the Ducks. You can go to ArizonaCoyotes.com for tickets or call 480-563-PUCK for tickets. They've got the Weekender plan, guarantees you seats for every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday home game. You can get that by calling the same number. Kachina Saturdays, their Kachina jerseys they're going to wear on Saturdays here, the throwback ones that we all love and gives us that nostalgic sense of the Coyotes when they first moved here. They'll be wearing those on Sunday. For more information on all that, go to ArizonaCoyotes.com or call 480-563-PUCK. This is a story we have told many times here on the Burns and Gambo Show. The last time we told it, I think it was Kyrie Irving. Every 6 months, there seems to be a superstar in the NBA who is disgruntled, who wants out for whatever reason. He wants what he's not getting with his current employer, and he says, get rid of me. Jimmy Butler is the latest superstar to say he doesn't want to be with his team anymore and he wants out. According to the reports, Gambo, the three teams that he has listed as his preferred destinations are the Nets, the Knicks, and the Clippers. But there is a willingness to expand that list depending on who steps up and says they're interested in not only trading for Jimmy Butler, but then giving him a 5-year, $190 million contract extension this time of year.
Yeah, Minnesota offered him a contract extension. I think it was 4 years and $100 million. So Minnesota offered him a contract extension. He turned it down. Said he was going to wait. So he did turn it down. So it looks like he doesn't want to be there. I mean, Karl-Anthony Towns, Wiggins, just doesn't seem to be the right fit for him. He is a really, really great player. I mean, he is a top-notch type of guy, could really help you. Now, look, they ended their playoff drought with Jimmy Butler last year. They got into the playoffs for the first time in a long time. I don't know exactly how many years it was, 12, 13 years maybe. But they ended a long playoff drought. They got in. Butler's a fantastic player. Listen, if the Suns could get him, I would be all for it. Because at some point, you gotta go get a guy like that. At some point, you got to go get him. Now, would I get him if I didn't know I could re-sign him? No. I mean, me and you are on the same page with that. Unless I know I could keep the guy, I'm not going to get him. Would I trade a bunch of assets to get him if I know he wants to resign here? Yeah, because you need a player like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that I was worried about this when they did it. I've always been kind of worried about this. When they traded up in the draft, they gave up the Miami unprotected pick in 2021. That's a really good asset to have, and one that I was kind of hoping that they would save for a rainy day, like a Jimmy Butler day.
You mean like the rain that we've had all day today here in Phoenix?
Today's a rainy day.
That rainy day?
Yeah. So, like, for me, that's – I would have loved to save that pick and used it to go get me a player that could get me over the hump.
Yeah.
A player. Now, I used it for a draft pick to move up in the draft, but that could be a really valuable asset, and now they don't have that. What do they have? They got their own first-round picks, which should be really enticing to a team, especially this year's first-round pick, the 2019 first-round pick. That's a great pick. It's a top-10 pick, probably, in all likelihood, it's a top-10 pick. Now, if you trade for a Butler or somebody, a team may look at that and say, okay, well, the pick's not going to be as good because you're getting Jimmy Butler, you're going to win more games. But either way, that's what they have. They have their picks and they have the Milwaukee pick in order to trade for a player.
I hear what you're saying about the pick. I'm not going to lie to you. Jimmy Butler is not my favorite. You know, to me, this isn't a – I like him. I don't know for me personally if I'm as enamored with Jimmy Butler's game enough to say, oh, yeah, go get him. Pay him $190 million. I mean, there are some guys, like, for example, if you knew Kyrie Irving was going to stay, that to me is the guy that every day that ends in Y, I'm making a trade for and I'm signing to keep him around. Okay.
Sure.
With certainty, with absolute, okay, I love that guy. I want him. Go get him, pay him, keep him here for several years. I'm not as certain with Jimmy Butler. Now, I'm not as somewhere for me, he's somewhere in between DeMarcus Cousins, who I wanted nothing to do with, and Kyrie Irving, who I wanted everything to do with, but I didn't want to make the deal because I knew he wasn't going to stay here. He's in the middle of those two in terms of guys I like and guys I'd be willing to give up a bunch of assets to get and pay a lot of money to keep. I like Jimmy Butler. I don't know if I $190 million for 5 years love Jimmy Butler. He's not all that to me.
At some point, you got to go after a guy like that. At some point, you got to pull the trigger. Not, listen, there's a lot of players on max contracts that aren't worth it. I mean, that's just a reality. You know?
No doubt.
There are a lot of players, you know, John Wall. There are a lot of players that, again, a lot of that aren't worth the max money. But, you know, again, like at some point, roll the dice. At some point, take a chance. Take a chance. What do you got to, you know, I mean, because this team hasn't made the playoffs in a long time since Alvin Gentry was here.
Mm-hmm.
The way they're structured right now, they're not a playoff team. They're not a playoff team the way they're structured right now. And jobs are going to be on the line if this team flops this year. I mean, jobs are going to be on the line. They don't win basketball. If they don't win, if they don't have market improvement this year.
Yeah. The problem with Jimmy Butler is that I would highly, highly, highly doubt that the Phoenix Suns would be the organization that he would want to sign long-term with. I just doesn't strike me as the kind of place that he'd want to be. And if he doesn't want to be here long term, then what are we talking about?
But why would
right?
he want to be with the Nets?
Because they have the money to pay him. So they have a ton of money next year.
Listen, I love Brooklyn. I spent a lot of my life growing up in Brooklyn. So, but I mean, like the Nets, the Clippers.
LA.
But the Clippers just got rid of DeAndre Jordan.
No, it's,
they got rid of Blake Griffin.
Look at the two.
Chris Paul's gone, and they're all gone.
Look at the two markets that he's chosen:
LA and New York.
Right? I mean, that's what it's all about. Clearly, in releasing those names,
none of those teams are good.
I know, but if there's cities he wants to live in because it's bright lights, big city, New York or LA, sorry, Phoenix can't compete with that. Just can't. I don't think he'd want to be here. I think the odds of him wanting to sign a long-term extension here would be so slim. If you're the Suns, yeah, make a call. Call, see what it takes, have a conversation. You're not doing your job if you don't. But the odds long-term that Jimmy Butler would choose to stay here, if that's where he wants to go, New York or L.A., he's not going to want to come here. He's just not. He's not. So
probably not. And that's that. You know, if that's the case, then that's the case. But at some point, you've got to lure a free agent here or make a trade for a player to come here that is a more of a veteran player and can help a young group out. And I'm not talking about Trevor Ariza or Ryan Anderson.
No,
man. I'm not talking about guys like that.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. Not at all. At some point, you will have to take the chance. My fear is that if you're the Suns, you're going to have to take a chance on a guy like the Raptors did with Kawhi Leonard, like the Thunder did with Paul George, without the assurances that they're going to stay long term, and you hope that you can convince them to stay long term.
If you don't give up too much, you know, like, okay, what did Minnesota give up? I mean, to get him. They gave up a pick that ended up being Lauri Markkanen.
And they gave up Dunn and
LaVine.
And LaVine, that's
Zach
right.
Zach LaVine.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, okay. You took a shot. You didn't give up Towns. You didn't give up Wiggins. So I can make an argument there they didn't give up that much to get him.
Yeah. There's no denying it has been a problem. But we are now getting a better idea of why the Cardinals' offense has struggled, and we'll share that with you next on the Burns and Gambo Show.